Welcome to the program, God and Country Radio, a program that looks at current events, politics, economics, prophecy, in the light of biblical exposition. I'm your Bible teacher, Pastor Brad Winship. And of course, today's program is going to be about Brexit, the British vote to leave the EU. This does not mean that the world is coming to an end, or that the Antichrist kingdom has arrived. But there are some important biblical lessons that Christians should discern from this event. It's another example of the world's move toward globalism. Although in that move, there will be fits and starts. A political friend of mine recently shared with me a joke. I even had a farm that was on the border of Poland and Russia. And the two countries were in a border dispute so that Ivan didn't know whether he was a citizen of Russia or Poland. But finally, the UN got involved and decided that Ivan's farm belonged in Poland. And Ivan's statement to the media was, "Thank God, no more harsh Russian winters." Well, the moral of the story is that Britain, no longer being in the EU, doesn't change a whole lot. Except a few titles. The Brits will still trade with the rest of Europe. The British pound is still the British pound. And the only difference is that Brussels, the EU headquarters, will not be telling Brits how to live. Let's begin with some history. After World War II, there was a movement to unify Europe. Under the professed motive of avoiding another European war like World War I or World War II. And additionally, Europe was divided up between many different languages and currencies and trade laws and tariffs. And the argument was that Europeans could not compete with a unified country like the United States of America. They should become the United States of Europe with one currency, one body of business law. So in 1957, in a treaty signed in Rome, the European Economic Community was formed by six countries: Belgium, France, Italy, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, and West Germany. Now, this meeting and treaty, which apparently was encouraged by the Vatican, took place in Rome on Capitoline Hill, one of the seven hills of Rome, the hill that was the citadel or the capital of the government and religion of ancient Rome. And prophetic preachers through the 50s and the 60s were all talking about how this was the beginning of the kingdom of the Antichrist. Revelation chapter 17, verse 9, "Here is the mind which has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits." Rome is known as the city of seven hills. And the woman is the harlot, false religion, that rides on the back of the beast. The empires of man, or particularly this final worldwide empire of the Antichrist. False religion is called a harlot because she is the opposite of the true people of God, the pure bride of Christ. And there was little doubt in the minds of the reformers and among evangelical Protestants that the papacy is the harlot that sits in Rome. This simply can't be coincidental. And furthermore, the coming kingdom of the Antichrist is described in the Bible as being the revived Roman Empire, which is the territory of modern Europe. Most of the modern states of Europe had their origins in the Roman Empire. Why do Bible scholars believe this? The prophet Daniel describes four world empires before Christ comes to set up his kingdom: Babylon, Persia, Greece, and Rome. And in Daniel chapter 2, in the days of the fourth beast, Rome, God will set up a kingdom. Then in Daniel chapter 7, in Daniel's second vision, four beasts or four kingdoms will arise on the earth. And in the days of the fourth kingdom, Rome, a leader will arise. He will speak out against the Most High, and he will wear down the saints of the Highest One. He will intend to make alterations in times and in laws, and they will be given into his hand for time, times, and half a time. Then in verse 26, God will take away his dominion. He will be annihilated and destroyed forever. This final empire will end with the ushering in of Christ's kingdom. And the time, times, and half a time is a Hebrew description of 1 + 2 + 1/2, which is 3.5 years, which parallels Revelation chapter 11, verse 2, chapter 12, verse 14, where we are told that the great tribulation will be for 3.5 years. So it's no stretch of the imagination to conclude that this fourth empire is the Roman Empire, the empire of the beast. But wait a minute, Rome no longer exists. Well, if you look at the prophecy of this fourth Roman Empire in Daniel chapter 2, it is described as the bottom half of the statue of man, beginning as one at the hips, dividing into two legs, and then into 10 toes, 10 kingdoms. Rome divided into the east and the west, and then divided up into European states. And throughout the Reformation, students of the Bible tried to identify which European kings or European states made up the 10 toes of the statue described in Daniel chapter 2. Isaac Newton, the famous scientist of the 17th century, wrote extensively on biblical prophecy. And in his book, Daniel and the Apocalypse, written in 1733, Newton worked out a whole scheme concerning which European nations were the 10 toes, the 10 kings who are to receive power with the beast for 1 hour. Revelation 17:12. If you have nothing to do for an afternoon, read Newton's piece on prophecy. At the very least, you'll be convinced of the danger of making speculative predictions about the meaning of prophecy. So Rome, ancient Rome, appears to be done with. But the prophecy in the Revelation is that the beast, this final fourth empire of man, will come back to life. And all the world will marvel when this empire comes back to life. Revelation 13:3 and 13:14. The beast is wounded with a sword and comes back to life, and all of the world marvels. And these 10 kings that are united with the Antichrist, the prophecy says, have not yet received the kingdom. But they receive authority with the beast in the future. Revelation 17:8. The beast that you saw was and is not, and is about to come up out of the abyss to go to destruction. And all who dwell on the earth, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, will wonder when they see the beast, that he was and is not and is to come. Here is the mind which has wisdom, the 7 heads or 7 mountains on which the woman sits. They are 7 kings. 5 have fallen, 1 is, and another has not yet come. And when he comes, he must remain a little while. The beast which was and is not is himself also an 8th and 1 of the 7th, and he goes to destruction. And the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have not yet received the kingdom, but they receive authority with kings, with the beast, for 1 hour, or for 1 short period. So did you get all that? The reunification of Europe in the 1950s, beginning with the Treaty of Rome, was considered a historical revival of the Roman Empire. I have hanging on the wall of my office an EU stamp commemorating the 25th anniversary of the European Parliament. It pictures a woman riding a beast on 7 hills with 10 flowers on the head of the beast. And the artist claims he was not following any biblical symbols. He said he was simply portraying the ancient legend that Zeus took the form of a bull and carried Europa, the daughter of the king of Tyre, to Crete. And Europia's son is said to be the founder of Europe. So no wonder the Bible prefaces all of these details about the seven mountains upon which the woman sits and the ten kings with the statement, this is for the mind that has wisdom. So one must know something about history and current geopolitical events. But over the last 60 years, the EU has been having trouble keeping unified, trouble with its currency. There have been a number of movements in the EU to leave the Union. The papers report that France, the Netherlands, Austria, Finland, Hungary might also leave the EU. But that's only because there's strong anti-EU movements in those countries, and some of their politicians have promised referendums on whether to stay or leave. Now, as far as the EU being the 10 kings of the Revelation, there are now 28 members in the EU, which certainly doesn't fit the biblical number. So this whole theory of the European Union being the foundation for the coming global kingdom of the Antichrist has fallen on hard times, especially with the rise of Islam and the loss of European power. Many prophetic teachers are now saying that the Antichrist kingdom will be an Islamic kingdom surrounding Israel. I'm not convinced. But it is interesting to see how people so quickly change their prophetic views based upon what's happening in the news. Now, personally, the Daniel and the Revelation passages describing the revival of this fourth beast, its connection with ancient Rome and the Caesars, convinces me to stick with the Roman European interpretation of the book of the Revelation. But Revelation 13 tells us that the whole world worships the Antichrist. So his empire will probably include Islamic territories, Europe and America, Canada, Mexico, South America. Maybe the G7 nations will become the G10 nations. But what does this current British exit mean? Well, it's not a surprise because Britain has never identified itself fully with the rest of Europe. Their ideological separation is represented by their physical disconnection from the mainland. Even Charles de Gaulle of France never wanted Britain to join the economic union because he saw Britain as an offshore interest of the United States. But the British reluctantly joined in 1973. But they opted out of the 1991 treaty calling for a common currency. So the British kept their British pound. And that made exiting from the EU very easy for the Brits, because it's almost impossible to get people to give up their money. And once the EU made countries use the euro, they locked them in. So Great Britain was never fully a part of the EU to begin with. Now, what precipitated Britain's full exit from the EU was that there were grumblings about the EU in the British electorate. And so David Cameron, their prime minister, in order to get votes from conservatives, promised that there would be a referendum, a nationwide vote on whether to stay in the EU. And he was sure that the Exeters would not win. He probably regrets ever having the referendum. So the Brits were so tired of all of the regulations coming out of the EU bureaucrats in Brussels, telling them how to do business. And the Brits were tired of the immigration. The EU is forcing them to take immigrants from Syria. You see, once you're a member of the EU, you must allow the citizens of other member nations the right to immigrate into your country. When Poland entered the EU in 2004, EU regulators said that only 5,000 to maybe 13,000 Poles would emigrate to Britain. The actual number came to 627,000. So now the EU was telling the Brits that only 20,000 Syrian refugees would enter the UK over 5 years. And the Brits didn't believe this. Also, Turkey wants to enter the EU, which would mean for Britain a possible flood of Turks immigrating to the UK. Then there was also British payments to be part of the EU, which amounted to £13 billion a year, £250 million a week. Those pushing for the exit pointed out that that's enough money to build a new hospital in Britain every week. The whole story about Britain's exit is a commentary on globalists, their motivations, and the greed and human depravity of man. Why work to produce goods and services? Just call yourself the headquarters of the world, and then you can take a cut from the taxes of every country. Hey, it's only 1 or 2%, and people will be glad to give up that money to have security and some global oversight. And you guarantee a place of power, wealth, prestige for yourself. There is a whole class of bureaucratic-minded people who are always out there lobbying the government and citizens to set them up in the place of power. It's like when you walk into the Louisiana Bayou and you come out having to pull the leeches off of your legs. Well, those are the globalists, the statists, the bureaucrats. You have to constantly pick these people off the system. Even Christians can fall into the trap of wanting to land that comfortable government job and then do all they can to hold on to it. Because it's in our fallen nature not to want to work by the sweat of our brow, Genesis chapter 3, but to live by the sweat of the brow of other people. Now, globalists, bureaucrats, sincerely believe that they're helping the world. It's certainly easy to convince yourself of that when your salary and your pension is at stake. And the ideology is this: unity will help solve all of our problems. If you don't believe in the biblical solution for mankind, be it the gospel, the new birth, the law of Christ, what solution can you offer the world to cure social corruption, injustice, war? Their only solution is to claim that unity is the answer. That people working together will bring about cooperation and success. This is the ideology of the UN. And we know this is a complete lie. Because a million sinners working together is worse than 1,000 sinners working together. Since man's default condition is evil, unity only empowers evil. So in Genesis chapter 11, God divided up the world into languages and nations so that they would not be empowered, so that they would not be able to do whatever their hand finds to do. To keep sin in check and to make for a more just and fair world, there needs to be division, not unity. But do understand that the banner under which globalism will be pushed upon the world is that unity or globalism will solve everyone's problems. So, in Great Britain, the pro-EU crowd, the elite ruling class, pulled out all stops advertising that leaving the EU would be disastrous. They called those who supported leaving the EU fascists, racists, bigots, little Britishers. It said that David Cameron converted every department in the British government into a full-time EU propaganda machine. And the rich financiers of the Bank of England claimed that leaving the EU would result in a recession. Home prices would drop 18%. And then the British government used testimonials from foreigners, encouraging the Brits to stay in the EU. The Prime Minister of Japan, former Secretary of State George Shultz, President Obama. But the whole thing backfired. The more the elitist ruling class put before the British people, the rich, the celebrities, the foreign politicians, encouraging the Brits to stay in, the more disingenuous it looked. And the more they stirred up the common Brit to get out of the EU. the more they stirred up the Brits to have national sovereignty and a cultural identity. And it didn't help much that the new mayor of London, who is a Muslim, supported staying in the EU. And the exit movement got some tremendous help from Boris Johnson. He's the former mayor of London. He's kind of a quirky celebrity in England. He got his fame by being a journalist for The Telegraph, and he would always write satirical pieces about the stupidity of bureaucrats and their rules. And Johnson's persona and his satirical humor made a big difference in the election. So it all came together in the providence of God so that the Brits would vote to leave 52 to 48%. So what does this mean? The end of globalism? No, the globalist movement is going to have setbacks every now and then. Because the globalist promise is a lie, which when implemented can't produce the glowing results in the long term. It results in just as many problems, if not more. Just as many tensions between countries. And the EU has especially had a hard time keeping up the lie in the long term. For the past 40 years. Kind of like socialism. It's popular on paper, but it always becomes unpopular when it's put into practice. So bureaucrats have to work fast to lock people into it. And long term, God is always proven right. The solution is always to do it God's way. Genesis chapter 11. National sovereignty, independence, and the constant effort to keep people from unifying and empowering evil. And also consider that globalism will never work long term because iron doesn't mix with clay. The prophecy in Daniel chapter 2 is that the united globalist empire at the end of this age will not be unified because God made people to be in separate nations. Daniel chapter 2 verse 42. As you saw the 10 toes, the 10 kings was iron mixed with clay. They will combine with one another in the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, even as iron does not combine with pottery. It's interesting to me that God includes that commentary in the prophecy to aid our understanding. But even with all the troubles and the British exit, don't expect the globalists of the world to take this sitting down. They can't afford to have their ideology discredited. Christopher Caldwell, in an article in the Weekly Standard, said it this way. The European Union is not stable, although the Remain forces have tried to portray it as such. In reality, the EU is constantly sucking in new resources to avoid collapse. There will be an inevitable next wave. A centralization to which Britain will be subject. In other words, there will be a renewed movement to encourage globalism, with all sorts of new reforms and new enticements. And many Brits, who have seen how lawless bureaucrats work, believe that even with this referendum, Britain will never leave the EU. Because the elite ruling class will drag out the process. They will find loopholes. They will tie it up in the courts. They'll drag it out until public opinion changes, and then they'll hold a new referendum. Don't think that the globalists will ever give up. We know the prophecy. We know where this is all going. Revelation 17:12. The 10 kings or the 10 nations have one purpose, and they give their power and authority to the beast. Revelation 17:17. For God has put in their heart to execute his purpose by having a common purpose and by giving their kingdom to the beast until the words of God will be fulfilled. But along the way, let's discern what's happening and know how to explain to others the difference between God's plan for a necessary division among the nations versus the Antichrist globalist agenda. And in all this, we need to remind our friends and our neighbors of Daniel chapter 7, verse 26. But the court will sit for judgment, and the Antichrist's dominion will be taken away and annihilated and destroyed forever. Then the sovereignty and dominion and the greatness of all the kingdoms under the whole heaven will be given to the people of the saints of the highest one. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions will serve and obey him. And as Jesus taught, unless a man is born again, he will not even get to see the kingdom of God. You've been listening to God and Country Radio with Pastor Brad Winship. The website to listen to this program again or other past programs is godandcountryradio.org. From there, you can send me an email with questions, comments, insights. Love to hear from you. That's godandcountryradio.org. Thank you for listening today. Thank you for including God and Country in your weekly discipleship. Let's close in prayer. Father in heaven, we're amazed as we see the unfolding of your prophetic plan. As the angel said to Daniel, none of the wicked will understand, but those who have insight will understand. Give us that insight as children of your kingdom, so we can be better witnesses for the glory of your Son, Jesus Christ, and his kingdom. In his name we ask, amen.